Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to It's Rainmaking Time. This is Kim Greenhouse, and we have today Dr. Brownstein, who is one of the leading experts in optimizing your health. He's a holistic family medical practitioner. He is the author of many books on health, but two of them that I have read are Iodine, Why You Need It, Why You Can't Live Without It, and Salt Your Way to Health. Two subjects on two focuses we would not normally think about. But ladies and gentlemen, welcome Dr. Brownstein to It's Rainmaking Time to discuss optimizing our health regarding iodine and salt and other things that are on his mind and heart today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. You just got back from London. What are you doing in London?
I was giving a lecture on those same topics in London to a group of holistic doctors.
So you actually teach or coach doctors as well?
I do. Those that want to be coached.
Are doctors coachable?
With them. A few.
That's great. That's wonderful. Talk a little bit about the recent discoveries with iodine. This was such a revelation, and I really think everybody needs to have these two books in particular. I know you've done one on thyroid and probably many more coming. But talk about what you've discovered and your work with Dr. Abrams or your understanding of the iodine discoveries.
Well, iodine was discovered in the early 19th century. And in the 19th century, it was recommended for almost any condition. And in fact, it was the most recommended medical item at its time. And primarily, it was being used for infections. Iodine is an anti-infective agent. There's no bacteria, virus, parasite, fungus, yeast organism that's ever been shown to be resistant to iodine. And it used to get a lot of wide press until the early 20th century when patent medicine took hold. And when that happened, iodine being an unpatentable substance and not costing a lot of money and the profit margin wasn't there, it sort of lost its focus in medicine. And so that's kind of the quick history of iodine. And as of late, we've sort of resurrected the use of iodine for treating all these infective disorders. And iodine's also been found to concentrate in the glandular tissue of the body, including the breasts, the ovaries, the uterus, the prostate. And it helps tissues prevents tissues from becoming cancerous, including breast cancer and prostate cancer and ovarian and uterine and thyroid cancer. And it just has such a wide range of properties in the body. It's in my estimation, it's the most important nutrient that you can add to your supplement regimen.
And yet, very few people actually take it and take enough. Explain about that, the amount you take, what you take.
Well, we've all been conditioned that there's enough iodine in salt and that we don't need any more iodine than what's already added to salt. And we've also all been conditioned, that includes doctors and lay people, that if you take iodine and you have a thyroid problem, you're going to make a thyroid problem worse. And if you don't have a thyroid problem when you take iodine, you could precipitate a thyroid problem. All those are false, and I call that the falsity of conclusions about iodine. And it's iodine deficiency that's driving the thyroid illness epidemic that's out there. It's iodine deficiency that's driving the breast cancer epidemic that's out there. I believe it's iodine deficiency driving the prostate problem epidemic that's out there. And again, I think that people need to take a really good look at iodine in their diet and consider supplementing with iodine, particularly in this environment, this Western environment that we live in with all these chemicals we're exposed to, which cause our body to not bind to iodine.
Talk about the role of bromine. You write a lot about what bromine is as a chemical, but I think the public, we need to understand what we're taking in every day and why we need iodine desperately.
Well, mankind developed over the centuries needing iodine. Iodine's an essential element. We can't live in our body. We can't live without iodine. You can't make any hormones without iodine. Your white blood cells can't function without iodine. So we've functioned in environments as humans. We function in environments where there's not too much iodine, and humans can be relatively deficient in iodine and still survive to a point. And we've also functioned in environments where iodine levels have been sufficient. But what's happened as of late is our exposure to chemicals such as fluoride and bromine, these are chemicals that bind to iodine receptors and cause our body to release iodine if we're exposed to too much of these items. These chemicals cause us to become very iodine deficient, and the amounts of exposure to these chemicals has increased radically over the last 20 years.
What is bromine in, for example?
Bromine is a halide. It's in the same family of iodine as iodine in the periodic table, and bromine is found in many consumer items such as iPods and computers and cars, and it's also found in furniture as mattresses and curtains and carpet as a fire retardant. Bromine is also found in food and drink as brominated vegetable oil. Some Mountain Dews have bromine in it. AMP energy drink has bromine in it. Some Gatorade products have bromine in it. Most of our bread products have bromine in it because we use brominated flour in the United States. And this bromine excess is causing our bodies to be iodine deficient. And the number one toxicity that I see in my patients by far is bromine.
And there's a way to test for it?
There is a way to test for it. You can do urinary levels, and I have a lab in my office where I've been testing people for years. And so far, every single patient that I've tested for bromine has tested too high. Some people have tested higher than others, but every single patient has tested for bromine toxicity. And the higher the bromine levels are, the lower the iodine levels are, and there's a direct correlation between bromine levels and illness. Generally, the sicker someone is, the higher their bromine levels are, and the lower their iodine levels are.
That relationship also translated into a major study. Was it like a 20 or 30-year study where they found out that Japanese women were not getting the same level or magnitude of breast cancer that we were in the United States?
They've shown for many decades that Japanese women get breast cancer at a markedly lower rate than U.S. women. And when Japanese women move to the U.S., their breast cancer rates start to come up to more of a Western level. The same is true for Japanese men and prostate cancer. On the mainland Japanese island, their levels of prostate cancer are much lower than they are here. And when the men move to the United States, their levels of prostate cancer start going up. Iodine deficiency and perhaps bromine toxicity could explain that correlation.
That's interesting. What about if someone said, look, we've been told by people to take kelp directly versus iodine? What do you say to that, and how does it translate? Will kelp act similarly?
Well, I think kelp can be a good source of dietary iodine if the kelp is grown in a clean area of the ocean. However, if the kelp is exposed to toxins like bromine or fluoride, the kelp can take up those items and not contain iodine. So it kind of depends on where you get the kelp from. The only other issue to think about with kelp is the longer it's been out of the ocean, the more the iodine that sublimates or becomes into a gaseous state and goes away from the kelp. So the iodine levels are very variable in kelp.
The work of Dr. Abraham, who is apparently also another wonderful leader in this area who's done a lot of research, he's the one who came up with the iodoral iodine. Talk about your experience of that. I would like to know, because obviously you're seeing a lot of patients, and this iodine test that's available that can be done inexpensively.
The way you can test iodine is called an iodine loading test, and my friend and colleague, Dr. Guy Abraham, developed that test. And what it is, it's a 24-hour urine test to measure how much iodine comes out of you and how much is retained after you ingest a known amount of iodine. And we can gather a lot of information from that test and determine how deficient your body really is with iodine, depending on those numbers on the test. And Dr. Abraham has also developed an iodine pill called Iodoral that's a combination of potassium iodide and iodine. And I find the pill very useful and very helpful for people, and we use it a lot in our practice. And, you know, again, I've said it before and I'll say it again, that iodine has been, you know, the single most important nutrient that I use in my practice on a daily basis.
You have a book on the thyroid. What is your sense of people being iodine deficient and their thyroid's not working optimally? Do you think there's a correlation in that?
Well, the thyroid gland sits in the lower part of our neck, It weighs 1.5 ounces, and it produces a teaspoon of thyroid hormone for a whole year. That teaspoon of thyroid hormone has to drive every cell in the body, the metabolic rate of every cell in the body, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So little variations in that teaspoon have big effects on how our body responds and how our health is. And the iodine is the highest concentration of iodine is in the thyroid gland. And the thyroid gland's main function is to produce thyroid hormone. You can't produce thyroid hormone without iodine. And if there's not enough iodine, you're going to have inadequate production of thyroid hormone. And I think that that's why we're seeing such an epidemic of thyroid problems, just this lack of iodine that's in our environment.
Very interesting. I've been on thyroid my whole life. My entire life since I was age 12. So I've seen all of the toutings of different types of thyroid chemicals and patent thyroid. And recently in the last 10, 15 years, I've been on Armour thyroid and then that was taken off. That was stopped for what reason, I don't know. But it sounds to me like iodine would be very helpful for people with thyroid conditions. And you've written about it in your book. What is the name of that book, by the way?
That book is called Overcoming Thyroid Disorders, and it's in its second edition. And there's no question that you can't treat a thyroid disorder appropriately without ensuring adequate iodine levels.
So where does one get the iodine load test? Are more doctors becoming familiar with this? Because I think probably 9 out of 10 doctors don't even know about it.
Well, let's try 999 out of 1,000 doctors probably don't know about it.
There you go.
So are more doctors becoming familiar with it? Those that want to will become familiar with it. But you don't need a doctor to do the test. You can do the test on your own. There is a lab called Hakala Labs, H-A-K-A-L-A, lab, lab.com. And the other lab that does this is called FFPlabs.com.
Wonderful.
And they will do the test for, I believe, $70 or $80, and they'll send you the kit and tell you how to do it.
Awesome.
And then send you the result back.
I love it. Let's talk about salt. I know it's the salt of the earth, and it seems to people that salt is nice, but it's not a big deal. When I was growing up, we were scared about salt. Don't take in salt. You'll have all these bad conditions. Keep everything unsalted. And we were wrong. Why? We were given incorrect information. What is it?
Well, the human body needs and requires salt. Salt's the second major constituent in our body next to water. We need salt to produce energy, to catalyze reactions, and we can't live without salt. And in times of, human existence, over the history of human existence, humans would migrate to where salt was plentiful, and there were wars fought over salt, and governments built and governments destroyed over salt. And the salt's become more plentiful now in Western societies, but it depends on what your definition of salt is. And the conventional definition of salt is refined salt, which is just sodium and chloride with some toxic additives added to it, such as ferrous cyanide and aluminum and dextrose. I say that's not salt. That's what I call refined salt.
Did you say aluminum? Wait a minute. Did you say aluminum in salt?
I did, in refined salt. But there's unrefined salt, which is salt that's as it occurs in nature, and it has over 80 minerals in it. It's very helpful for the body. And when I use the term salt, I'm talking about unrefined salt. And my comments to my patients are that if they're not taking in unrefined salt, they're salt deficient by my definition. Now, yes, we get too much refined salt in our diet right now, and that causes a whole host of metabolic and hormonal problems in the body, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't use unrefined salt in our diet. That just means you need more unrefined salt in your diet.
What does it actually do in the body? How much does one need, and over what day? And is it based on body weight or what?
It is based a little bit on body weight, but generally for an average-sized adult, about a half a teaspoon to a teaspoon a day of unrefined salt should do it. Someone who's more active or exercises a lot will need a little bit more. Kids will need a little bit less, but we all need some unrefined salt in our diet. And it helps to balance the pH of the body. It helps to hold water inside the cells. It helps to produce hormones, helps to support the adrenal function. I found that people who don't, who have a salt deficiency, which is the vast majority of my new patients when I first see them, are very unhealthy and have a lot of hormonal imbalances.
So salt is in an unrefined state. And what color is it then? There's different colors of salt. Like I have something from real salt and it's kind of pinkish. And then there's gray salt and there's salt from France. And it's not white like Morton salt. It's different.
Well, if salt is generally pure white, it's been refined and bleached. And I say that's a salt to avoid. Salt should have color to it. Color would indicate that it's got minerals. Now, different salts are going to have different colors and different minerals depending on where they're harvested from. So that's why you're seeing some gray salt and pink salt and red salt. But as long as the salts are free of toxic elements, I say those should be part of your diet. And I've tested some various brands of unrefined salt and found them very helpful, very clean, and you know, full of minerals, which is very helpful for our bodies.
I don't think that the average person thinks of salt as being full of minerals. Can you explain that? Because the perception is it's not.
It's not for the average person because they're eating refined salt, which has no minerals in it. So the commonly used refined salt that most of us have on our tables and we see in restaurants has zero minerals in it. It's just sodium and chloride and some toxic additives to boot. Salt, that's why people don't associate it with it, but that's because they don't know about it. The government has, you know, made us fearful of salt, and they've sort of lumped in refined and unrefined salt together when they're two separate substances and two different animals.
Aren't they two different molecular structures as well?
Absolutely.
Another question about low-salt diets. What do you tell people who are on low-salt diets?
Well, it depends on what they're on a low-salt diet for. Most people go on low-salt diets thinking they're going to lower their blood pressure. It's never been shown to be the effect for the vast majority of people. It's minimally effective for those that it is effective for. And my experience has been people need unrefined salt in their diet with the minerals. That's the better way to lower your blood pressure. Now, we all need to distance ourselves from refined salt. There's nothing good about that. It throws the body's pH off. It throws the blood pressure off. Not a healthy substance for the body. But that has nothing to do with unrefined salt.
Totally different universe.
You got it.
Talk a little bit about the thyroid unrelated to iodine, what your findings have been in the last 5 years of your practice. Just what you're finding in terms of people with thyroid conditions. Are there any patterns you're seeing? Is there anything you want to share with us?
Well, there's no question that thyroid illnesses are occurring at epidemic rates right now. That includes hypothyroidism, non-directive thyroid, Hashimoto's disease, Graves' disease, and thyroid cancer. And unless we make some changes in our environment, unless we make some changes in the food we're eating and the choices we make at our kitchen tables, I only see this problem getting worse and worse over time. So what I see over the last few years is just more and more thyroid illnesses that are unable to be treated in a conventional model, and they really need a holistic approach to them with better diets and better food choices.
Do you mineralize in the morning? Do you take green drinks in the morning for yourself or protein drinks?
I think it's best to try and get the substances from your food more than anything.
Directly.
And so it's better to eat a whole food diet and eat, you know, unrefined food and a variety of food. And then if you need to supplement, I think that you can supplement with various vitamins and minerals and green drinks and whatever. But certainly the best way to do it is to try and get it from your food supply.
I read in your book on salt, Your Way to Health, that salt really goes back as far as 5,000 years ago into China and 3,500 years ago in Egypt. And it actually was considered a currency. Is that true?
Well, the word salary comes from the word salt. And they used to pay the soldiers in salt. And as I said before...
Oh, my God, I didn't know that.
As I said before, civilizations were built and destroyed based on salt and salt availability and salt wars. So that just proves that we can't survive without salt as human beings, and animals can't either. So we need salt in our diets. We just need the right kind of salt. And what we've evolved over the last 50 years is to eating an unrefined salt, which is not a natural part of our diet.
Do you think animals need salt the way we need salt, like Celtic sea salt or other unrefined?
Absolutely, animals need salt, and animals will gravitate to where salt is available to them.
That's interesting. You said there's 32 references to salt in the Bible, obviously salt of the earth, but 31 other references, that salt is in IVs, big part of medicine, but what kind of salt is in an IV?
Sodium and chloride is the kind of salt in an IV, and just to maintain fluid status in people, but that doesn't supply the minerals, and that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about unrefined salt with over 80 minerals in it.
That's awesome.
But salt's a big part of medicine, and it's always been a big part of medicine. It will be a big part of medicine for as long as medicine is going to deal with human beings, since salt is the second major constituent in our bodies.
I watched you on a show online with another doctor in a discussion about bioidentical hormones. For those people that are not clear about the benefits and the distinction between taking hormones and bioidentical hormones, would you share the distinction for them?
Well, that show is on my website, which is drbrownstein.com. What I was discussing with that conventional doctor was the difference between bioidentical natural hormones and synthetic hormones. And I've been using bioidentical natural hormones in my practice for over 20 years now. I found them safe and effective for enhancing health and treating a wide variety of conditions. And my feeling is that there's no reason to use a synthetic hormone ever in a human being when there's a natural bioidentical hormone available. A bioidentical hormone is a substance that has a direct chemical structure of our own hormones. So when our body sees it, it has a receptor that it binds to, and it has enzymes to break it down. This is contrasted with synthetic hormones, where the body's never seen it before. We don't have receptors to bind it. We don't have ways to clear it out of our body. And these are much, much more toxic items for our body. The example that I would give the listener is, natural progesterone is a bioidentical natural hormone made from plant products, a direct duplicate of our own progesterone production, whereas Provera, the most commonly prescribed progesterone in the United States, is a synthetic form of it. And Provera has been associated with breast cancer and autoimmune disorders and blood clots and death at much higher rates. And natural progesterone has not been associated with any of those things. In fact, it's been shown to improve health and to lower rates of those illnesses, and to perhaps even lower the death rate for those that take it.
How many women in the last maybe 10 years come in having been educated about bioidentical hormones?
Well, I've been writing my books for about 12 years now, so many of them have read my books, and they're, you know, I consider my patient population a fairly well-educated population. And over the last 10 years, people have become more interested and educated about natural bioidentical hormones because of all the headlines on the synthetic hormones. So people are definitely more aware of these items and more unwilling to tolerate being prescribed synthetic hormones, which I don't think anybody should be on, and any doctor should be prescribing them. And I think the FDA, if it was really watching out for our health, should pull those items from the market right now.
Which ones would you pull?
Well, I would start with pulling Provera, which should have been pulled 20 years ago when the studies started to come out. But that one has certainly done the most damage of any of the synthetic hormones and caused the most problems, including, you know, the breast cancer epidemic and death and strokes and blood clots and, you know, a whole host of other problems.
What about Premarin? Wasn't that also a problem?
Premarin is also a problem. It doesn't seem to be quite the severe problem that Provera is, but there's really no indication for using Premarin in any human female when we have human female hormones that are bioidentical and readily available to be used. So Premarin shouldn't be used either, but it doesn't seem to quite have the toxicity that Provera has.
You have also written Overcoming Arthritis, The Guide to Healthy Eating, and The Guide to a Gluten-Free Diet. Overcoming Arthritis, Dr. Batman G, prior to his passing, wrote a book, Your Body's Many Cries for Water, that a lot of the people he found that had arthritis, if they drank the proper amounts of water, could help eradicate it. What do you think about that, and what is your take on it?
I think that he wrote very eloquently about an important subject, and I couldn't agree with him more. And one of the basic tenets to helping people overcome arthritis is to drink adequate amounts of water. And I read about that in my book as well.
That's great. The Science of Hydration, he did like a 30-year study on it. I'm so sorry that he's not here to talk with us today.
He died a few years ago.
Yeah.
His work certainly still lives on.
Yeah, it's quite extraordinary. Do you find that most of your patients, when they first come in, are dehydrated?
Vast majority of my patients are dehydrated, and so I educate them about drinking water and salt, using water and salt as part of their daily regimen. And when they start using water and salt, their skin improves, their nails improve, their hair improves, and arthritis symptoms get significantly better. And most importantly, their brain function also improves as their brain rehydrates.
Amazing. Is there anything else you'd like to share with us today about your other books?
Well, I would tell the listener to do their own reading, to educate themselves and make their own health decisions. And I'm sure when they read what I've written about all these subjects, that they'll come to the same conclusion I have, that we need to really rely on ourselves and to eat the right foods and to take the right supplements to improve our health and not just rely on media headlines, which can certainly lead us astray.
I have another question for you about something so common that people go through every day, which are headaches. Now, we know that Dr. Batmanji wrote extensively about how water and salt can help, hydrating properly can eliminate headaches. I just wondered what your findings have been also with regard to the elimination and prevention of headaches.
There's no question that you can't not improve headaches in a dehydrated state. So first step is water and salt to rehydrate the body. And really, the next step that I found for headaches is to get the thyroid working correctly. And the vast majority of people, the headaches will either go away or get markedly better by following those steps.
That's amazing. What is with the adrenals and the adrenaline disorder? It seems to me that you and I live in a society where people are exhausted and fatigued. We know that it's multifaceted. And part of it is even from the electromagnetic radiation that we're in and the toxins and drinks that we take in. But the adrenals, are they not a whole other realm of concern to you?
The adrenals are two endocrine glands on the lower part of the kidneys, and they sit in our back. And they produce hormones that help us give energy so we can exercise or go do our daily activities. When we're in a stress state, they'll produce hormones to help us cope with that stress and to run a little faster or fight a little harder, depending on what we need to do. And in this constant stressful world that we're in now, the adrenal glands can become overstressed and become sluggish and not produce the hormones like they should. Now, one of the reasons this happens is iodine deficiency. Iodine not only concentrates in the thyroid, it concentrates in the adrenal glands as well. The other aspects that control adrenal function are salt intake.
That's fascinating.
The adrenal glands regulate salt, and salt helps to regulate the adrenal glands. So it's impossible to have good functioning adrenal glands without adequate iodine and adequate salt intake and adequate water intake. So all of this sort of fits in together, and you know, I write about this in all my books.
Yeah, these books are fantastic. Salt Your Way to Health. This book will show you why salt is the most misunderstood nutrient. That's a great book, and iodine, why you need it, why you can't live without it. These two books I have on my desk every day to make sure I remember to take iodine and to make sure I have the right amount of salt in my system. And I really think everybody listening to the show, you need to get these books to understand how critical this is, that this is part of your daily life. Dr. Brownstein, I want to thank you for being a guest on It's Rainmaking Time. Is there anything else you wish to say before we close?
I'd like to thank you for having me, and thank you for listening. And just you can find out more information on my website, which is drbrownstein, BrownSTEIN.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have been talking with David Brownstein. He's the author of Iodine, Why You Need It, Why You Can't Live Without It, Salt Your Way to Health, and actually many other books, Overcoming Thyroid Disorders, Drugs That Don't Work, Natural Therapies That Do, Overcoming Arthritis, The Guide to Healthy Eating, and The Guide to a Gluten-Free Diet. Dr. Brownstein, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Bye now.